Valentine escorted Bool off the Thunderbolt and asked about springs flowing into town. Bool pointed out a beach and assured Valentine the water was good there. Nevertheless, Valentine made a mental note to remind the party about the water purification tablets. He returned to the captain's cabin, knocked, and entered. They sat down and talked about the watering and market party.
Fresh food and time. We lucked out.
Unless this shark fin shows up. Much as it would be nice to blow it into flotsam, our cover story would suffer. Even worse, one of your own ships could sail in.
Doubtful. Nothing on this side of the island worth going after.
Well, with your permission, tomorrow I'll take a few men into town and have a look around. All I need to do is make it easy for this man to find me.
He stood up, as did she. As he turned sideways to get past her to go out of the door, their chests touched. She glanced up into his eyes, and then away, as if afraid of what she might find there. The watering party left under the supervision of one of Carrasca's petty officers. They used the Thunderbolt's two boats, the smaller motor launch and a lifeboat, heaped with plastic 10-gallon barrels. It wasn't the most efficient way to water the ship, which had been amply filled before leaving Jamaica anyway, but it gave the men something to do and added a touch of realism to the story. Under further instructions from Carrasca, they also returned with planking torn from an old fishing boat. Some men fashioned it into a raft and attached a makeshift flag. Then they towed the target out beyond the surf for gunnery practice. Carrasca made sure the distance was greater than that to the town, and she had her men lob a few shells at the target to impress those ashore that the gun worked and they had shells to spare. She still didn't trust anyone on Hispaniola, no matter what promises came from below a handsome mustache. Valentine was with Post when the gun began to fire.
Ah, just gunnery training. I told you, remember?
Sorry, Val.
Post was red-faced. He raised his arm on his wounded side.
Nerves might not be healed yet, but shoulder's working great. Hardly a twinge.
He flapped an elbow and smothered a wince. Valentine went to the market the next day. Much of the town looked to be in rubble, victim to wave and war, storm or earthquake, and never rebuilt. What was still standing was gaily painted. Blue-trimmed doorways looked out from whitewashed buildings, and elaborate designs like a child's drawing of men and animals decorated awnings and windowsills. The widest street in Cape Haitian was crowded with straw-hatted food vendors selling produce out of wooden carts. Valentine and his men would have been besieged by beggars and hustlers, except Captain Bool sent a set of Navy-uniformed gunmen to act as escorts and intermediaries in the market. Which was just as well, because the Creole dialects of the streets was beyond Valentine's French. The acting purser simply picked out items, and the strong men passed out what looked like beaded ribbons to the people in the market. Shouted offers for liquor, drugs, and even women tempted a few of the sailors, but Valentine and the petty officer kept them at work filling the cart.
Hey, Lieutenant! You want a good drink? Wine! Me got some wine! I have friends up north! I know what you like! What you want!
Valentine spotted the man waving to him from the crowd, a dark bottle in his hand.
Don't buy anything from that one, sailor, sir. There's better wine to be found. Off, dog boy! Or you'll be sorry!
He looked like a man to Valentine, and he didn't see any dogs. The man's eager eyes implored him across the sea of straw hats in the market, and he held out the bottle again.
Have a taste! You'll want some more!
Valentine reached for the bottle.
Ow!
And one of the guards rewarded Dog Boy with a crack across the wrist with a baton. It dropped. But Valentine's reflexes saved it from crashing to the cobblestones.
You don't want his peace, sailor, sir.
His ears picked up the sound of something clinking against the glass within. Dog Boy had disappeared into the crowd.
Maybe I don't. I've got a drain that needs unclogging on board. I'll use it on that.
Valentine kept the bottle in his hand for the remainder of the session in the market, using it as a pointer. The purser and his men hauled their acquisitions back to the dock. Yet another set of round trips were ahead for the motor launch. Once back on board, past the grogs hungrily eyeing the supplies coming alongside, Valentine took his bottle down to the cabin and emptied it down the drain. Whatever was within refused to come out, so he smashed the bottle against the steel sink. A wooden tube, lacquered and stoppered, had been stuck inside. He examined it for a moment, then pulled out the cork and extracted a rolled-up note from the tube.
To officer with black hair and scar, I will come to your ship tonight after midnight. I will swim to the anchor chain. Must keep clear of soldiers in boats. Victor.
Valentine read the note twice, then got on Ka and took it up to Carrasca.
Is he telling us there is danger from soldiers in boats, or that he has to swim clear of them?
The Orlikong could sink any number of boats. I've looked around their harbor. They have a lot of those canoe fishing boats. I suppose they could put a couple hundred men in the water, but we'd sink them before they got halfway here. But we might want to shift anchorage farther out.
Valentine shook his head.
He'll have a tough enough swim as it is. Let's wait until he's on board.
There was a rap at the door, and a teenager entered.
Captain, one of those rowboats dropped off a letter.
Thank you, Lloyd.
Today is a day for notes.
She handed it to Valentine.
An invitation to a dinner and beach party in our honor tomorrow night. However many officers and men as I choose to bring. I smell a rat with a nice mustache.
We'll make some excuse tomorrow during the day. A radio message. As long as this Victo is on board, we can take our leave of El Capitan Bull.
You think he means to take hostages? Why didn't he do it today? There must have been 10 or 12 men on shore at various times. He could have taken you and your party. That would have given him something to bargain with.
He could be waiting for orders.
Huevos. The man's a schemer. I could read his eyes. He may be playing us false, but it's to his own purposes.
I'm going to arm Anka's grogs and what's left of my marines. You might want to have the machine guns ready tonight.
They'll be manned. I want everyone to have a chance at fresh food, though. There's an old tradition at sea to give your men a good feed before action.
Her expression softened into that of the woman he'd played mahjong with in Jamaica.
Would you care to have dinner with me in the cabin?
Far be it from me to break with tradition.
The food tasted better in the cooler night air. Valentine put on a plain white shirt with his best pair of pants, fresh from the laundry, and went lightly up the stairs to Carrasca's cabin. Askin, her only lieutenant, answered the door. A handsome young Jamaican, with hair cropped so short it made Valentine think of peach fuzz, Askin was dressed in a trim black uniform, decorated with a heavy silver whistle on a thick chain. A linen covering added a formal note to the table in the wardroom. The Thunderbolt's best plates and cutlery lay upon it.
We really should have asked Post as well.
She wore the same blue uniform Valentine remembered from the dinner at Commodore Jensen's, though now it bore an epaulette on the right shoulder.
He's only just started walking.
The chief doesn't care for formal meals, and Anka
just wouldn't fit in. I don't mean with us, but in this cabin.
It would be a bit like having a horse in here for dinner.
She sat, and the men followed suit. Carrasca began uncovering dishes.
Askin, you did wonders with the birds.
A sugar glaze from the beets on this island.
She took another cover off.
The bean and rice dish is mine. Sweet potatoes, crab cakes with goat milk butter, and a fruit platter.
Valentine took a bite of a buttery crab cake, feeling guilty that he hadn't brought anything. He turned to Askin.
The captain tells me you've landed here before.
Further along the north coast, near the Samana Peninsula. We were chasing some little trading ship. They beached it and waded through the surf to escape us. It took us forever to take off the cargo. Something must have scared some of them worse inland, because they came scampering back.
Did they say what it was?
I think they got a look at one of the mines. Bauxite, maybe. Those and the sugar plantations. They're hell on earth. Hispaniola is the worst island in the Caribbean.
The Curians have a knack for doing that.
The old Spectre by Kingston. He was a saint compared with the creatures running Santo Domingo. They don't even try to keep their people alive.
Unspoken agreement turned the three to their dishes. Further conversation might spoil their appetites. Valentine had seen his share of cruelty in his years facing Kerr, and worse, recently participated in it as part of his assumed role as a coastal marine. The meal ended with fruit for dessert, and a single glass of wine chilled into sangria. There were no toasts this time. Askin excused himself, carrying two green bananas out with him.
He has the bridge as soon as it gets dark, even though we're at anchor. I told him to be extra careful tonight. I warned the watch to keep an eye open for our swimmer. Now we wait, David.
Valentine sipped at his sangria, enjoying the sound of his name from her lips.
I have no complaints. I'm left alone with a beautiful woman.
Carrasca smiled, her teeth gleaming against her dusky skin.
Captain Valentine, I am shocked. A breach of etiquette. But for God's sake, don't stop.
Valentine's innards warmed to the wine and the spark in her eyes.
I haven't had a woman to talk to in a long time, Malia. When all this is over, when we can both relax and take off our respective hats, so to speak, I'd like to spend some time with you. You're someone I can talk to.
So that's what you'd do with me? Conversation?
He met her gaze.
Yes. Long, in-depth conversations. Late into the night.
Really, David? How long has it been since your last good conversation with a woman?
Over a year. In New Orleans, I was tempted to pay a woman to talk to me, but I resisted.
It's better to wait for a decent conversationalist.
Yes.
I'd like to talk to you, too. I'm sure you'd enjoy it. Women with any Cuban blood in them, well, they make great conversational partners. You'd be amazed at how many different topics I'm familiar with.
I'm sure.
It's a shame. Now that you've got me thinking about it, I've been lacking in decent conversation myself. The only problem is, we're both married to our duty. We can't have the men thinking anything else.
Maybe if we whispered.
I tend to shout at the top of my lungs when I'm really interested in the subject.
We couldn't have that.
Carrasca bit her lower lip.
You speak French? Perhaps we could have a short...
They froze. At the second screaming blast of the alarm, they hurried out of the cabin to the bridge, just a few steps away. Carrasca killed the klaxon and picked up the ship's squawk mic.
Battle stations! Battle stations!
Aspen spoke to the engine room, asking for maximum revolutions. Valentine stepped aside for men rushing to their stations. He looked to the shoreline from the wing of the bridge. Five great bonfires lit up the beach outside Cape Haitian. Wide fishing boats with double-banked oars approached like giant water beetles, men crammed inside. Pot shots from shore zipped through the air or tinged harmlessly against the steel sides of the ship.
Why would they approach with the bonfires behind them, making them perfect silhouettes for...
He went to the opposite side of the bridge, heart in his throat, and searched the darkness. The stars went right to the horizon in the clear tropical night. No ship sailed out there. That much could be seen. He heard Carrasca shouting orders for the anchor cable to be cut. Valentine went to a searchlight and threw the switch. He began a slow sweep of the seaward approaches of the harbor. He probed the darkness with a knife of light. The beam fell across something small and gray, approaching like a sea monster with part of its snout showing. Orange light flashed, and a shell howled as it landed just in front of the ship. Water fountained into the air, but the cannon's flash told Valentine what hunted the thunderbolt from the sea. It was not Boole's wooden Drakkar.
A submarine.
The Commodore had mentioned some old diesel ships in the hands of the Haitian Kerr. It had a low profile like something from the Second World War. Valentine hardened his ears in that direction, even as the second shell approached, and picked out the sound of churning engines. He grudgingly congratulated Boole for a clever poker game. The thought stayed frozen in his mind as the second shell hit forward beneath him.
Swimming, Mom! By myself! Look!
Time faded. The next thing Valentine was aware of was a disembodied floating feeling. He thought he heard his mother saying, "David, I'm not going to hold you up anymore. You'll have to swim for yourself." Cool, slightly slimy Minnesota lake water engulfed him as she let go. Fear. Valentine kicked hard and spun his arms like wheels until he broke the surface and felt air on his face again. The panic changed to triumph.
Swimming, Mom! By myself! Look!
His mother's bronze face split into a smile under its wet tangle of glossy black hair.
Ha ha!
He came to his senses, disoriented. Distant and muted sounds echoed over a roaring in his brain. Valentine bobbed in the ocean, the waves adding to his sensation of drunkenness. Woolly-brained, he watched the Thunderbolt cut her cable and get underway. Someone had the presence of mind to turn the Orlikon from the shore boats to the attacking ship. Red tracers crossed overhead, seeking the exposed figures on the bridge of the submarine. The deadly fireworks played across the deck of the submarine, tearing the conning tower's men and machinery to pieces. The submarine's gun fired again, and its shell detonated in the wake of the now moving target. The Orlikon's tracers shifted, and this time tore through the thin shield of the submarine's cannon. The 30-millimeter shells blasted the gun's crew from the deck in a series of whipcrack explosions. Valentine noted, rather dully, the Thunderbolt turning to escape the harbor, leaving him behind. She and the submarine traded machine gun fire. The bullets scrabbled against the respective port sides of the two ships. The ineffectual fire reminded Valentine of a pair of crabs battling with their oversized fighting claws, both too well armored to be damaged by the exchange. Hard hands grabbed him by the shirt and hauled him into a boat. He looked around at a mass of black faces, eyes and teeth shining in the night. A few pointed their guns at him.
Put those things down, you fools! I'm not going anywhere!
He consoled himself with the sight of the Thunderbolt's churning wake as she escaped the harbor. They landed and trooped up the beach and past the wounded Haitians. The soldiers' screams and lamentations struck Valentine as surreal, with soft sand beneath his feet and a breeze licking his skin as though he were just back from a pleasure swim. A few of the women from the town tended to the men in a haphazard fashion, caring only for the faces known to them and ignoring others. The soldiers moved him along with words and gestures rather than the blows he expected, especially after the brief intense fight. They escorted him to the stoutest building off the market square, a cinder-block, three-tiered structure with a colonnade and a few friezes that reminded him of an elaborate wedding cake he'd once seen back in New Orleans. They brought him into the basement by way of an exterior stairway and metal door broken only by a narrow gun slit. A Navy-uniformed warden led him to a cell. Its 10x10 concrete floor supported no furniture, and only a drain hole and a dirty ring on the floor around it hinted that there had once been plumbing fixtures. Cockroaches scuttled for the corners at their entry. What light there was came in through the face-sized window in the door, where tiny shards of reinforced glass and wire still stood in the broken pane, like the teeth circling a lamprey's mouth. He stood in the holding cell, wet and uncomfortable, while they searched him. Finding him weaponless, they took only his belt. Valentine waited for what he thought to be an hour or so, and a familiar eye appeared in the circle of jagged, stained glass. It widened in surprise.
My God! So it's true! The Bagana himself!
That sounds like the man who told me not to fear treachery.
I know which side of the bread my battle rests on, my friend. Or in this case, on which side of this door I wish to be standing.
Valentine sat and rested his back against the wall.
Funny thing, buttered bread. If it is dropped, life always arranges for it to land butter side down.
My bread is bought to me, so I wouldn't know. Listen, my friend, you'll have bought that bread, decent food, as long as you stay here, if you'll tell them the whole truth. That through me, your capitan was convinced to stay.
Are you sure you want to take credit for tonight's fiasco? Your prize got away.
Your sailors were more alert than we thought for all the illicit rum and tequila they bought today. But your ship was damaged, my friend. Damaged. Whatever you sought to do here is at an end. The lords of Santo Domingo still rule, and they know now that you play a false game.
Thanks to those who would sell their countrymen's lives. For what? A uniform? Someone to bring you your buttered bread?
Yeah, I must put an end to this pleasant exchange, though in the future we'll have freedom and leisure to talk. Well, just leisure in your case. But first, a comrade of yours will join you. It seems he wished to see you again a great deal, so much that he risked his life to be in the harbor tonight. One moment, please.
So they had Victo, too. Valentine waited and rested. So close, and you blew it at the end. He readied an apology for Victo, whose life had also been on the table in this mad gamble. Valentine felt a flash of resentment at the superiors, life weaver and human, who pushed men to their deaths, sacrificed like pawns. But it wasn't Victo who stood in the doorway, glowering at him. Captain Saunders.
By Kerr and the catastrophes, I owe the devil his due. It is you.
Saunders' skin was darker, his hair lighter, and the wattles on his neck more pronounced with weight loss. He wore loose, butter-colored cotton clothes and rope sandals.
Good morning, Captain.
Stow it, renegade. Bull put this man in shackles. He's slippery.
Bull yelled something to his men outside the door, who rushed to comply with the Haitian Creole. Valentine submitted to his boots being stripped off and his wrists and ankles being clamped in steel. A second chain linked the upper and lower segments of the restraints.
That's better.
Saunders looked over the fittings with a careful eye.
So young, so sure of himself, plotting behind my back. I found you out still, clever man.
Shouldn't you be getting back to the Thunderbolt, sir? It is your command, after all.
A paroxysm passed over Saunders' face, and he reached into his shirt. Valentine saw a sheathed knife under his arm. Saunders clutched the hilt with a trembling hand, then relaxed.
You should be congratulated for being in the right place at the right time, Captain. Was it dumb luck or evil fate?
It took some doing. I got away from those bastards off Jamaica by only the thinnest margins. I jumped in a raft with P2 and my pistols while the fighting was still going on. We rowed for shore.
Saunders still enjoyed talking about himself, and he began to pace the cell.
Nobody noticed a missing raft, but we've been busy killing a Kurian.
I rowed for shore, but it turned out there was a third ship there. Didn't know that, did you? A little fishing boat, just a wheelhouse and a deck, really. From the other pirates in Montego Bay. The scoundrels on board were hoping one or both of the ships would be so damaged by the fight they could get in on some salvage. Their sailing master, for he wasn't fit for the word captain, was a crafty one lurking there. Pointed a bunch of guns at us, bobbing there in the raft. I saw him watching P2 with a look I'd seen before, so I took my pistol and put it to P2's head. Promised to blow the boy's brains out if they didn't put their guns down. But I'd trade the boy for my life. The sailing master chuckled and brought me on board. He meant to murder me, of course, so as soon as I got on deck, I shot him and another who moved, clean dead. I made the others throw their guns overboard, and between me and P2, we got 5 into the raft. That just left us with 3. Enough to handle the ship, but not too many to watch. I couldn't go back north, but I knew the only Kurians with ships nearby were here. We made for Santo Domingo. I ended up shooting another of those Montego dogs on the trip. I stayed awake 2 days at one stretch, promising myself with every breath that I'd see you again and avenge myself. I offered the devil my soul for this moment.
Not much of a bargain for either of you.
Hold that tongue or I'll cut it out, by Kerr, I will. We got to this island, and I found the local lords. I gave them the Jamaicans, and P2 for that matter, for the promise to let me serve them at sea. That came hard. Felt a bit like that guy in the Bible who had to sacrifice his own son. I couldn't have made it that week at sea without P2. The Kurians didn't know what to make of me, but they had that submarine working. They used it at sea because it was almost unsinkable. The cannon's sights were wrecked. I fixed it up for them, and they gave me the command. We heard about what happened in Jamaica. At first, I thought you had ideas about setting yourself up in style there. When the good Bull radioed Santo Domingo that you were seen off the coast, I knew the devil had kept his part of the bargain. You'll rot in here until I get the Thunderbolt back, and then what's left of you will go back to New Orleans for disposition. Dispossession, more like, of your traitorous hide, as slowly as I can make it last.
In a way, Valentine was relieved. He wouldn't be killed outright. And so far, no one had bothered to wonder just what he was doing off the shore of Hispaniola.
Better get that gun fixed, sir. Otherwise, the Thunderbolt will sink your pig boat under you.
I intend to. The damage is reparable, within even the capabilities of the joke of a machine shop they have here in Haiti's wet asshole. But help is on the way.
Valentine feigned disinterest, and said no more in the hopes that Saunders would brag out further details, but his former captain turned to leave.
Oh, Captain, one more thing. Suppose you do get the Thunderbolt back. Are your new masters here just going to let you sail off in an armed ship that size? Our mutual friend, Captain Boole, he may just have orders to shoot you in the back of the head once the Thunderbolt's safely taken.
A traitor judges all others by his traitorousness.
Saunders sneered as if he had hit upon an important point of philosophy.
Kerr keeps her bargains with those useful to them.
What about with those who are no longer useful to them? What happened to P2 when you didn't need a second set of eyes, Captain?
Boole, have him beaten!
Saunders stormed out, letting his stomping feet do his cursing for him. Boole's lips curled into an uneven grin, and two heavy-set Haitians entered, wooden clubs in hand. An hour later, Valentine consoled himself with the knowledge that his pain would not be forever. Pain never was. The body either died or healed. In either case, the pain subsided. But for now, he had an existence of seeping blood and throbbing pain. Blood stinging his eyeballs, the sting coursed up the side of his face like a hot circuit. Blood in his mouth, blood in his urine from the hammer-like blows to his kidneys. He fancied his toes were bleeding where one of the jailers had stood on them with thick-soled boots. And pain underneath, pain as deep as the Cayman Abyssal. Vomit covered his shirt, and worse filth stained the inside of his pants. He felt a calloused, yet gentle hand rock his head. Some kind of leaves went into his mouth, and the hand worked his jaw. He chewed with loosened teeth and swallowed. It seemed important to the hand.
Oui, my child. These will help, yes.
Valentine opened one blood-gummed eye and looked up into a black face. Warm, dark eyes looked down at him, a tenderness glowing there thanks to some inner light. He felt he must be resting in a lap, though the arrangement of her legs seemed wrong, but he only had a moment to enjoy the sensation before fading out. When he awoke, he was in clean cotton ducks of the same kind he had seen under the straw hats in the Cape Haitian market. Something had woken him, and a sniff of fresher air made him turn to the door, which the breeze told him was open. A figure slid in, moving mostly with its arms like a chimpanzee. It was the same woman who had cradled his head in her caressing hands. She was disfigured. Two fleshy stumps were all she had left of her legs, and one arm ended in a leather-covered knob at her wrist. She had a wide nose, so wide it seemed to touch every other part of her face, below a cheerful yellow bandana tied tight around her head. Swinging on her arms, like a cripple using two short crutches, she was at his side in two strides. She pivoted on the wrist stump as neatly as a ballerina in point.
Feeling better, child?
Yes. Whatever was in those leaves helped.
The door remained open. A lemon-sucking guard watched every move the woman made in the bare cell. Valentine noticed that she wore a man's wristwatch with a cracked crystal on her good arm.
Food and water help more. I brought both. I'm Sissy. I tend to the poor souls in here.
Sissy?
Short for Narcisse.
She unrolled a bundle. A coconut and further food wrapped in bits of rag greeted him.
Food doesn't sound that good, but that coconut...
As full of milk as a cow, child. You want me to hold it for you?
She sniffed at the air above his waist, like a mother wondering if a diaper needed changing.
I think I can manage.
Valentine removed the core plug and tipped the sweet, thin coconut milk down his throat.
You a good healer, child. I see men die from such a beating. Here you are with an appetite already.
I'm grateful.
He handed her the empty husk.
You want the meat inside?
Maybe later.
I understand, child. Been there myself.
Sorry to hear that. Grateful and sorry.
That make you too rung up on every man in this town.
Narcisse.
Valentine spoke not to his nurse, but to the ceiling of the cell.
That's a lovely name.
20 years ago, I was a lovely girl.
You still are. Nobody is more beautiful than someone who takes away the pain.
Child, you a charmer. Now you three rung up.
Valentine unwrapped a piece of cheese and nibbled at it with sore teeth.
Good of them to let you in here.
Captain Bull's orders. I hear the men talking. They want you to leave.
Valentine probed a loosened tooth with his tongue and refrained from comment.
10 minutes and you need to pass water bad. I be back with a basin.
She swung herself to the door and glared up at the man blocking it. He moved aside.
Thank you.
Valentine almost felt the air chill at her tone. Sissy helped him urinate at the end of the predicted 10-minute interval in such a matter-of-fact fashion, Valentine almost laughed at the procedure.
Ah, oh, Christ, that burns.
Ooh, pain mean you still breathing. Told myself that before. And before that, too.
She put his head in her lap again and started to sponge blood clots out of his hair.
You wondering, and you too polite to ask. I'm like this from my own beating, from trying to run away out of here. I start out in the sugar field, try to get away once too often. I be dead, except I can cook better than anyone this side of the island. And they afraid of my juju.
Actually, I was wondering about the watch. It doesn't fit you.
Most people just see a woman with stump. These belong to my man, Robert. He went to join the gorilla, and I never see him since. I think he dead.
Valentine lay back, trying to fall asleep. There was no pain in sleep.
You ever think of running again?
She cradled his head again and brought her face close to his so he could hear.
Hard to run. We no leg, child.
When you bring me dinner, here's what I want you to do.
Narcisse listened, gently stroking his head. But Valentine felt her body tremble with excitement as he spoke. Valentine lay down and tried to sleep away the afternoon. He'd gotten up and walked around the cell. There was one final wall of pain to get through as he did so, and then he felt his strength coming back to him as though a dam had burst. He put his back to the wall where the guard couldn't see him and squatted and stretched and tried a few push-ups. The exertion left him as limp as water. He tried to sleep. He told himself he would never be able to rest. There were gaping holes in his plan, beginning with the necessity of him staying in this cell for another meal. He tried to relax, worried that a change in mood could alter his life sign signature. He hadn't seen any Reapers on Haiti yet, or felt their presence, but that did not mean they wouldn't come for him. And with all these worries, sleep still ambushed him. He woke with a start at the sound of Sissy's voice outside the door.
What? You work by the hour? Food getting cold, boy. Get this thing open.
The door swung inward, and Valentine rolled over to see Narcisse. She had changed into heavier, long-sleeved clothes, and the yellow bandana had been replaced by a blue-green one. Valentine rolled onto his side and knelt, as a hungry man looking forward to his meal. The guards looked in Narcisse's bag, poking through the contents.
A fair lot in here.
You know the captain orders. He want him well fed. He didn't eat much earlier owing to the beating. He be healing hungry now. I wash him too, that what the water's for.
The jailers exchanged a look. One stepped aside so she could pass. She executed a neat hop over his foot, but her trailing culottes caught on his boot. Something fell from between her stumps and clattered to the floor. The guards and Valentine looked down. It was a filleting knife with a razor-sharp blade and a sturdy handle. The guard outside the door reached for his rifle. The one inside bent to grasp at the knife. Valentine took his chance. Excitement overrode the stiffness in his body. The defunct but heavy watch that once belonged to Narcisse's lover was wrapped around his hand in an improvised brass knuckle.
What is this?
The jailer turned his head at the blur of motion. What was left of the crystal shattered against the bridge of his nose even as he tried to bring up the knife. The other raised his rifle. To Valentine, it seemed as though the guard moved in slow motion, and a rifle is an unwieldy weapon for a close-quarters fight. Valentine whirled around the pain-blinded guard at the door and stepped past the long barrel. He brought his watch-covered fist against the second guard's jaw, trapping the gun under his other arm. Sissy had the knife now, and stuck it up and under her opponent's ribcage. Valentine grabbed his guard's head and pushed it as hard as he could into the wall behind him.
Get the keys.
They ain't good for the outer door.
She slammed the door to the interior staircase shut.
I got the captain's keys. Bull asleep for the rest of the day, and no much use to anyone a while after that. His chicken curry had a pinch of juju in it.
Valentine looked at both rifles and took the better of the two, an old Ruger Model 77 44 caliber. There were no spare magazines, but one of the guards had a handful of 44 cartridges in his pocket.
Food and water?
He took one of the guard's sandals off and put them on his bare feet.
Got it.
Narcisse threw the bag over her shoulder.
Okay, get your arms around me. We're out.
Narcisse wrapped her arms around his neck, holding onto her mutilated forearm with her good hand. Valentine came to his feet easily. She weighed no more than a loaded backpack. He went to the deadbolt on the basement exterior door.
It's the shiny steel one with the longest barrel.
Valentine brought the rifle barrel up the stairway.
Most of the men that are still whole are behind sandbags in the harbor. They expect your ship to come back for you. The white man with the chicken neck wants to spring a trap once they land the troops.
Valentine kept the rifle to his shoulder and ascended the stairs. Where his eyes went, the iron sights of the rifle followed. He heard banging on the door Narcisse had locked back in the cells. A trio of Navy-uniformed men approached the stairway, rifles held ready, hunched over as if trying to make themselves smaller. They hugged the wall all in a row like the three blind mice. Valentine ducked when he saw the rifle barrel coming his way. The shot pinged off the wall behind his head. He popped his head and gun back up and shot the front man as he worked the bolt on his rifle. The other two dropped to the ground and fired without aiming. Valentine ran, popping another shot from his hip as he crossed the street, trying to keep the other two soldiers hugging pavement. His opponents looked more interested in getting behind the twitching body of their leader than in shooting at him. He made it into an alley, chased only by the sound of a gunshot from the roof.
You okay?
You'd be running a lot lighter if I wasn't.
I want to get away from the waterfront, if that's where the soldiers are. You wouldn't have a suggestion on how to get to the resistance, would you?
We get out of town and head west. Hope you're feeling better and some kind of athlete, child. These mountains, they kill you if the captain's men don't.
Sissy guided him out past the standing buildings and into a mass of rubbled buildings. A shanty town of sorts grew out of the ruins, homes created from rebuilt walls and roofed with everything from corrugated aluminum to old doors to woven palm fronds. Gaping locals got out of Valentine's path. He was running with gun ready and Narcisse clinging to his back like a baby monkey riding on its mother. He ran to the canebrake beyond the rabble, then to the trees and momentary safety. Valentine crossed the Plaine de Nord at a steady, loping run. Narcisse clung tightly to his back, Valentine's shirt tied around both their waists to keep her from being bounced like a sack. They moved through the muted light of the forest, crossing old roads that were now only paths and the occasional overgrown foundation. During a break, Valentine took a look to the south at what looked like a tabletop mountain.
How you run like that, child? Don't you get tired?
Valentine did not want to be reminded.
Oddly shaped mountain.
That no mountain. That the citadel. An old fortress. It take many years and many lives to build, they say. It belong to him now.
The local Kurian.
She nodded.
Why are we running toward it?
They wouldn't expect me to take you there. Once we come near the ruin of Sans Souci, we turn west into the mountain. Then you'll be among friends.
The dead air of midday enveloped them. Sweat poured off the pair and mingled as it ran down Valentine's back. Narcisse mopped his brow and eyes as he ran. By nightfall, they hit a grade that made Valentine slow to a walk. Evening bird calls and air flowing like a slow stream seemed to whisper a promise of relief from the day's heat. Valentine found a heavy tree trunk and set Narcisse down between two roots. He passed her the water, and she spat out a beaded chain she had clenched between her teeth and fingered the charm on it with her good hand.
Those look like rosary beads.
My favorite, Juju.
She smiled, handing him the water.
They were blessed by the Pope himself in the long ago, my mother told me. She got them from her mother.
I thought you practiced voodoo.
Voodoo? A bit of everything, child. Even the Pope did it. He just didn't know he did it.
Valentine emptied his gun and looked down the barrel.
Captain Boole's men take good care of their weapons.
He dote on that sort of thing. Every gun means some piece of trading he did. He just protecting his investment.
Valentine dried his chest with his shirt, eyes stinging with sweat. Even the thin cotton of his pants seemed to suffocate his skin.
It's hot here. You'd think the shade would help.
He bit into some kind of rice flour bun from the sack of provisions.
It much worse the further inland you go. The cool night is soon. Your name? Valentin?
Valentine. Valentine.
Oh, like the saint. And your first name?
David.
David. The king who dance. Your name is strong with magic.
The only dancing I'll be doing is at the end of a rope, if we don't find the gorillas.
He looked east, where a long string of mountain feet ran down to the ocean.
Are you up to it?
There is a road along the coast. They will catch up soon on horses using it, once they know what direction we go. But perhaps they will not come this far. No man can run as fast as you. This is a race for a story.
Where's the finish line?
Oh, I cannot say for sure. They move. There are gorillas to the west is all I know. No many kilometers, I think. Their area begin at a place of good magic, and we are near it.
So close to Captain Boole.
They have an understanding, perhaps you would say. You do not know Haiti, David. The Korean on this part of the island, he is more concerned with appearances than results.
The one in the citadel. Do his drinkers of death visit Cape Haitian often, or use the road?
Drinkers of death? You mean the whisperers? He does not use them much. Again, appearances.
Valentine thought for a moment, wondering if he was losing something between his barely adequate French and her Haitian Creole. A Korean who did not use his reapers much?
I don't understand.
Knowing that is the first step on the path to wisdom.
Hope the path isn't as steep as this damn hill.
He picked her up, retied his shirt, and carried her onward. The next day, after a long mix of jogging and walking the rugged mountains of the coast, Valentine heard the sound of a hound's cry. It brought back memories from 5 years ago. He was tired, hungry, despite emptying Narcisse's store of food, and still sore from the beating in the Cape Haitian jail. Evening was well on its way, but the sun had disappeared behind the mountainside. Picking a path through the tangled growth would become a blind, exhausting flight for a normal man. Valentine's gift of night vision would help, but he needed a modicum of light, and without some moonlight penetrating the clouds that gathered above the canopy, they were as good as lost among the lianas and creeping vines.
We're being tracked.
We.
Her strong, good hand still locked the ring of muscle and bone around his neck and shoulders that allowed him to bear her.
You wouldn't have some hot pepper somewhere in that food bag, would you?
I wasn't planning on cooking, child.
Green katoras screeched at them from the trees above. The noisy parrots mocked them.
How did they catch you when you ran before?
Valentine pushed up yet another steep hill. Perhaps he could outlast the tracker, if not the dogs. Talking to Narcisse might get his mind off the pain in his legs and back. Exhaustion was an enemy that could not be beaten, but it could be delayed if he kept his mind from giving in to it.
The first time was when I work in the cane fields in Santo Domingo. I hitch a ride on a tap-tap.
What's a tap-tap?
One of those painted trucks. They are still running after all these years. The only thing on them that isn't 40 years old is the tires. The driver of this tap-tap turned me in at the first station we come to. There is a standing reward for runaways. He was a poor man. After that, I met my lover. He was one of the gods who came for me. Kinda than the rest. After punishment, a whipping, he got me a job cooking at the West Station for the guards on one of the highways. They would stop, and I would cook and wash. I had the time on my own when there were no soldiers to take care of. I went into the woods and at a waterfall met a juju man.
A witch doctor, you mean?
Yes, David. When I touched the stream to drink or wash, he say I make writing in the water, which tell him I could practice voodoo.
Valentine set her down next to a great mahogany tree, looked downslope, and set the sights on his rifle. He worked the bolt and chambered around.
So he taught you?
People think voodoo is all fear and hate, but there is love and healing in it, David. There is a bad side. Like anything, it can be used to destroy. Those who work their magic with both hands can cause much sadness. Have you ever heard of a zombie? On the east side of the island, there are many zombies, slave to the evil ones. They hardly need their whisperers to feed from them. Such a sad thing to have the Gros Bonange taken and the poor soul standing there with no chance to even run.
The great good angel.
It is the spirit that enters you at conception. It animates you.
I learned it was called the vital aura.
One word or another, it is all the same. Didn't I tell you that already?
Yes. Seems different when it comes from a life weaver.
Still think there nothing to voodoo?
I never said that. I've seen enough to know not to laugh off anything.
Valentine settled down behind a thick tree root, stomach against the moist earth, with a good view of the slope.
Our Gros Bonange is maybe packing for a tap. I'm going to see if I can't take out a couple of these dogs before the light fails. I smell a rain coming. That'll throw them off if they don't get here first.
Wait for me to tell you to shoot.
She slid next to him for a better view down the hill. She removed her bandana, and Valentine saw more scars going up the side of her head. They had a stretched-over, half-healed look to them. Burns from long ago.
Why? Are you going to work a charm to make me aim better?
Don't know one, or I would, David.
The occasional barks and yips grew louder. Valentine tucked the rifle closer to his shoulder. He wished he had more time to get familiar with the gun. It felt a little nose-heavy. Too late to fill the stock with lead weights now. Slathered dogs came out of the gloom, towing a ragged black figure up the slope. Valentine listened for the hoofbeats of more men behind with hard ears. He heard nothing. Valentine looked down the barrel and put the foresight square on the man's chest. He placed his finger on the trigger, then startled with recognition. He put up his gun.
That's the man who sent me the message in the market.
Narcisse squinted.
Oui, I thought so when I heard the dogs. His name Victo, but the captain's men call him Dog Boy. He hunt wild pig with those things. He's a character. Come into town just to trade. Though I seen him around more lately.
Monsieur Valentine!
Victo was waving, and he held up a pair of boots.
Have no fear! Look! I have your shoes, sir!
Valentine stood slowly, his aching body fighting him.
Thank you, Victo. You know what a good pair of boots means.
Valentine put on cotton socks, another gift from Victo, and slipped the familiar boots back on his sore feet. The sandals had chafed his skin badly during the long run from Cape Haitian.
I thought you'd be on the Thunderbolt.
Victo showed a healthy set of teeth.
No! Soon as we knew you were missing, I put ashore.
Where's the Thunderbolt?
Down the coast, off a little island. They won't be seen unless another ship from the other side of the island comes looking. That's Roots Land.
Valentine took a good look at the man who had rescued his boots. Victor was handsome, with coal-black skin stretched tight over lean muscle.
Roots?
Gorillas.
Narcisse interrupted.
We need to be moving now. Sun is going down, but that doesn't mean they can't follow us still. There's more dogs on this part of the coast than just yours, Victor.
Yes, woman. He carry you all this way?
Like an empty sack. Up and down these hills. Never knew a man could run like that. What do they feed you up north?
I'll tell you if you tell the story of why the gorillas are called Roots. Do you hide in tunnels?
It's an old saying, Blanc. When the old hero Louverture was taken from us, he said, overthrowing me, they have cut down the trunk of a tree of black liberty. I will shoot up again through the roots, for they are numerous and deep. We aren't numerous, my friend, but we are deep. Deep in the mountains, deep in the forest, though for once all men wear the same yoke.
Valentine took up his human backpack again and swallowed a grateful mouth of Victo's water. The water left him as fast as he took it in. He thirsted as if the last time he had water was yesterday.
Never been so thirsty.
Victo pulled a metal tin from his pocket, an old Breath Mint logo in red and white still visible on the lid. He opened it.
Salt pills. Take two now, two more later.
There are springs soon. Don't worry, child.
The cat led the way, and the dogs circled as they hiked. It began to rain, one of the enervating downpours of the Caribbean summer. They made a queer procession, Valentine toting his human load, the rain-soaked dogs crisscrossing first in front, then behind, and Victo's long-legged tread at the rear. They slogged through the night with an hour of fast walking along the hillsides, a 10-minute break, and then another hour of walking. By the time Valentine set Narcisse down again, he had lost the battle with exhaustion. His time in the KZ and life on the Thunderbolt had softened him from his years of run walks with the wolves and long treks with Ali Duvalier into the Great Plains. He had to take his mind off his legs, which felt like someone had shot them full of sulfuric acid.
So you ran away from the station again?
He put two more of Victo's salt pills on his tongue. They tasted almost sweet.
Oh, yes. I heard you could get away if you reached the coast. There were boats, men who would take you across the waters to safety. But of course I was caught again. Brought to a coastal village under a plantation owner. A terrible man, this one. He had four strong men hold me down, and he broke my legs with an iron rod. Broke is not a good enough word. He make it so the bones inside were nothing but splinter. You should have seen them. They look like two run over snake. After that, there was nothing to do but take them off. The beast of a man gloated over me, said something about my not running anymore. He got his face too close. I tried to put out his eye. He chopped off my hand with a machete. They let me live, perhaps as an example to others. For a while, I go from plantation to plantation, and they would set me in the sun, a sign around my neck, where the workers would walk by every day as a warning to others. Then Captain Bull found me. He had been a friend of Robert, in a manner. And he took me to his station on the Cape.
Whatever happened to your lover?
He just disappeared. I think that is the worst part of this time. You do not even know if people die. They just disappear. Perhaps they run. Perhaps they were killed. You don't know.
Valentine's legs no longer bothered him. He tried to imagine what it would feel like to have the bones so broken they were nothing but pieces, and had to shift his mind to the trees towering overhead.
My brothers and sisters, too. Just gone.
I'm sorry.
Victo nodded.
Let's sleep. It is safe. We are far enough into the roots land that anyone after us will come slowly.
Can you find them?
They will find us.
Valentine would have slept through the dawn were it not for the birds. The parrots hollered back and forth between the trees like argumentative neighbors, while thousands more greeted the morning with song and call. Victo and his dogs slept in a snoring mass, and Narcisse lay with her back pressed up against his. He felt something disquieting in his crotch.
Sissy?
Yes, David?
I think a bug or something crawled up my leg.
Not this part. Especially if it is a centipede. Turn yourself so it rests in your trousers rather than against your skin.
Valentine shifted, wondering if after all the hazards he faced, he would finally be brought down by an insect. Whatever it was decided to cling to his thigh.
It's still there.
Take down your pants.
Victor woke up and looked at the operation. Valentine got into a position as if he were doing a push-up, and Narcisse helped him take down the loose cotton pants.
Ah, it is a centipede.
Valentine looked down. It was long and black, with painful-looking pincers waving back and forth. Narcisse maneuvered her head and blew on the centipede. It didn't care for the breeze and began crawling down his leg. Still blowing, she herded it onto his lowered trousers and from there used a stick to encourage it to return to the debris on the floor.
They can kill. Though for a man as healthy as you, it might just be very painful.
The same thing happened to a friend of mine. It bit his sack. He said it swelled up like a mango. Oh, how he howled.
Thanks for waiting to tell me that.
Valentine heard the gorillas first, as he cast about that morning with his hard ears. The dog-led trio was following a game trail west up yet another hillside. Five or six men, keeping concealed, paralleled their track up the slope. He picked out their step from the cacophony of the Haitian forest. Bird calls, creaking trees, and wind in leaves. Valentine called a halt. The dog startled at the sound of the gorillas' approach down the hillside. Two came down to greet them. The rest observed from above. Valentine was relieved to hear glad words of greeting rather than a challenge when they caught sight of Victo. They were well-fed, if scantily dressed, with rifles tied across their shoulders and short wooden spears tipped with metal and thorn-bristled clubs. They embraced and descended into a bantering conversation Valentine couldn't begin to follow. Victo turned to him with a smile.
They were sent to find us, Captain Valentine. Word of your escape reached the hills. They are also in contact with your ship. It is waiting off of Labadee, not far from here.
Valentine's growling stomach asked the next question.
Do they have food?
Soon. Their company watches the road out of Limba at the river. They have a camp there. It is a downhill walk.
Thank God.
But soon you'll be climbing mountains again, my friend. You must see the keeper of the weapon against Kerr.
So you do know. What is it? Don't tell me I traveled 1,000 miles for an old voodoo curse.
No, Papa Legba will tell you more. I don't know much about how it works. A very old magic, they say. But even the Whisperers fear to cross into this part of Haiti.
Where do I find Papa Legba?
Victor's eyes furrowed.
They did not tell you? You must go up to the Citadel to meet the Kurian there. We call him Papa Legba. He will show you the weapon.
Vampire Earth, Book 3, Tale of the Thunderbolt, Part 1, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2005, Eric E. Frisch. Published by arrangement with Trident Media Group, LLC. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2010, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, Tim Getman, Colleen Delaney, Nanette Savard, Lily Beacon, Richard Rowan, Andy Clements, Tim Carlin, James Lewis, Elliot Dash, Thomas Penny, Terrence Aselford, Dexter Hamlet, Yasmin Twazan, Michael Glenn, Mort Shelby, Sonny Lasky, David Coyne, Joe Brack, and Johann Detweiler. Book adapted for graphic audio and directed by Ken Jackson. Dialogue editing and sound design by Temeskin Wubna. Additional music by Brian Patton, Nathaniel Perry, Matt Webb, Dan Sondak, and Johann Detweiler. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Vampire Earth, be sure to look for Night Angel Trilogy by Brent Weeks and the Vata's War series by Elizabeth Moon, Available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll also find samples of all our action-pumped titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts.
Available now in Graphic Audio.
The Last Gunfighter, number 19, Slaughter.
Did you have any trouble on the way here?
None I couldn't handle.
Well, I hope that you can help me handle the trouble that I've run into here. I wasn't sure about bringing in,
A gunfighter? I don't know what Turnbuckle told you, Mr. Stafford, but I'm not a hired gun, if that's what you're thinking.
I'm aware of that. But you are a man who knows what to do when all hell breaks loose, aren't you, Mr. Morgan?
Yeah, I reckon that's true.
Did you come into the city from the north?
On horseback.
Then you must have seen all the oil derricks in the San Fernando Valley as you rode through it, as well as here in town.
I did. I heard folks had started drilling for oil around here, but I didn't expect to see derricks all over like that.
Those oil wells, Mr. Morgan, are the gateways to that very hell I was talking about.
Look, fellas, it's one of those damn cowboys.
Morning, boys. Heading into town?
No, don't tell them anything. You know you can't trust any of those cow-stinking bastards.
I reckon you're not from these parts, mister. And by these parts, I mean west of the Mississippi. So I'm not gonna take offense at those careless words of yours.
Get down off that horse, you son of a bitch! I'm gonna teach you a lesson! The days of you cowboys riding roughshod over everybody else are over.
Hatch, you better not kill him. You know how upset Mr. Magnuson will be if you do.
Oh, I won't kill him, but I'll make the shit-stomping son of a bitch wish he was dead.
Forget it, Morgan. We don't want your help.
Jorge, what do you mean?
What has this man done since he came to the valley? Brought us here tonight so that Magnuson can kill all of us at the same time. Don't you see it, Dolores? He's working for Magnuson.
You got it all wrong, Sandoval. I didn't have anything to do with his attack.
You expect us to take the word of a known gunfighter and hired killer?
You know, Jorge might be onto something there. Morgan's the one who wanted this meeting. Hell, he brought us here like lambs to the slaughter.
Don't shoot, Morgan, it's me.
Figured you'd have gone back to town.
I wanted to know if you'd found anything. I thought you might come back by here this evening. Bastards came out of nowhere and started shooting at us.
Not nowhere. I found their hideout.
They're not Montero men?
Not hardly.
What do you think they have in mind?
I don't know yet. Magnuson, I reckon that big wooden tank's got oil in it, doesn't it?
What? Of course it does. All three of those wells have come in and are steady producers. We store the oil there until it can be put in barrels and taken to the refinery. The tank's at least half full, maybe more.
It'd probably be a good idea then if we kept those hombres away from it.
Son of a bitch! Stop them! Shoot them!
Frank Morgan is The Last Gunfighter. Available now in Graphic Audio.
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different Graphic Audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.